Sichas of Pasha Shaftim is in Chelik Beis, Volume 2 of Lakuta Sichas. We've spoken at length on many occasions that Elul is an Ori Miklot. Elul is like a city of refuge where a person can escape and be protected by the month of Elul, like a city of refuge protected those who killed or shed blood by accidentally. In addition to all that we've spoken about, we find that the Shaftim v'Shaitrim, the judges and the policemen and the enforcers that every city was supposed to have, so the Sifri, the Medrash, says that this commandment to have judges and enforcers applies not only to settlements and to communities in Eretz Yisrael, but also in Jewish communities outside of Eretz Yisrael. Then the Sifri goes on to say, the Medrash goes on to say, now you might think that the Ori Miklot, cities of refuge, should exist outside of Eretz Yisrael as well. So we are told, Eile, these are the places where you should make these cities of refuge, and not outside of Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, the Medrash says that although there were no cities of refuge built outside of Eretz Yisrael, but if someone had killed accidentally outside of Eretz Yisrael, he can be protected and absorbed into the cities of refuge that existed in Eretz Yisrael. So from the fact that the Medrash combines or compares, equates the establishment of judges and enforcers to the building of the Ori Miklot, of the city of refuge, by saying that because judges and enforcers were necessary outside of Israel, we would think that the Ori Miklot should also be outside of Israel. So we see from this that there is a strong connection between Shaftim and Ori Miklot. The idea of judges and enforcers was not merely to punish someone who sins. Rather, the purpose of the enforcement, of the punishment, was in order to cleanse those who have sinned. And the same is true also with the exile of having to go to a city of refuge. Golus is mechapedes. Golus brings purification. Kapara, as the Alter Rebbe explains in Egedus HaTshuva, kapara doesn't mean forgiveness. Kapara means cleansing. That which brings kapara washes away the blemish of the sin. That's already after the sin has been forgiven because of the tshuva. So when we say that golus is mechapedes, it means that golus cleanses, washes away the blemish of the sin. And so it is also with the punishment that is given for sin, the enforcement of the courts that punish the sinner. It is for the purpose of cleansing and washing away the blemishes, the after effects of the sin, so that the person who had sinned is now not only a forgiven sinner, but that he is once again as desirable and as acceptable as he was before he sinned. So since the function and the purpose of the two are the same, the judges and the enforcers are there to cleanse away the ill effects of a sin from a person who has sinned, and the Ori Miklot, which is a form of golus, where you have to live in this city that is not yours, that's a form of golus, the purpose and the effect is also one of cleansing and washing away the blemish. That's why we would think that wherever there are judges and enforcers, there will also need to be cities of refuge. And in fact, you would think that they need to be outside of Israel even more than inside of Israel. Because Eretz Yisrael, Eretz HaKadosh, means a place where the desire for godliness is strong. Chutz La'aretz, outside of the land, would also mean outside of that desire to serve God, of the desire to do God's will. So you would think that outside of that desire, in a place where that desire does not exist, outside of the edits, there would be a greater need for the Ari Miklat, and that you should have cities of refuge outside of Israel. And yet we're told that judges and enforcers we need to have outside of Israel, but the cities of refuge only in Israel. So to understand this properly, the Rebbe says that there are really two parts to tshuva. One is the regret for the past, regretting the sin that is already committed. And the second part of tshuva is making a strong resolution concerning the future. Because what good is regret if in the future the sin will repeat itself? So you have to have a strong resolution that precludes the repeat of the sin, in order that the regret should be meaningful and significant. Because if there's a regret for the past sin, but no strong resolution to be rid of the sin in the future, then it's like going to the mikveh while holding on to that which makes you unclean. So the city of refuge had to be in Eretz Yisrael, had to be in the Holy Land. Because if he remains outside of the Holy Land, in other words, he wants forgiveness for what he had done in the past, but he doesn't enter into the desire to fulfill God's will into the Holy Land, meaning the holy desires, the holy will to serve God, he remains outside of that desire, then what good is his regret for the sins that he's already committed? But a person who has committed a sin outside of Israel and wants to be absorbed into the Ari Miklat inside of Israel, that is acceptable, that's fine, that's the place where he should go. In other words, he's running away, v'nos shoma, as it says about the unintentional killer, that he has to flee there to the city of refuge. V'nos shoma, he runs away there to the city, he runs away from a place that is chutz la'aretz, a place that is outside the will of godliness, the will to serve God. And he comes to Eretz Yisrael, he goes into this new will, a new resolution for the future, that in the future he will serve God, he wants to serve God, and then he is surrounded, he is absorbed into the Ari Miklat of Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, the judges and the enforcers cannot be in Israel. For the people outside of Israel, outside of the desire to serve God, the judges and the enforcers have to be there in the same place where the person who is sinning. Because in order to judge, which is the function of judges and enforcers, in order to judge, you first have to be in that person, you put yourself in the place of the person who has sinned. You can't judge someone unless you've been in his place. So the court, the judges, in Israel cannot appreciate, cannot fully understand the difficulties that one faces when he exists or lives outside of Eretz Yisrael, in Golus. They can't appreciate, they don't understand the concealment of godliness that exists outside of Israel, and how difficult this makes it for a person to think and speak and do godliness, and how much effort it takes in order to overcome all the trials and all the tests that one faces outside of the Holy Land, outside of the Holy Will. Because in Eretz Yisrael, a place where God's eye is upon the land from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, the people who live in that condition can have no appreciation of what it's like to live outside of Israel and the difficulties that causes. And so they can't judge because they haven't been in that place. As the famous story of the Mittel Rebbe who was receiving people for Yechidus, private audience, and so also with the Tzemach Tzedek, that an incident happened where in the middle of receiving the guests, the Rebbe asked that the visitations be interrupted for a certain amount of time. And then they were once again, the visits went ahead, proceeded. And when they asked the Rebbe what was it, what had happened, the Rebbe explained that when a person comes and asks for advice on how to rectify a sin, the only way to be able to give good advice is to find within yourself that same sin on a subtle level. And someone had come and had asked the Rebbe for advice on how to rectify a really gross sin, and the Rebbe couldn't find in himself, even on a subtle, in a very subtle form, he couldn't find a similar sin. And that's why he needed to take a break to work out an answer, to find advice to give to this person. So we see that you can't really appreciate, you can't judge and help another person with their problem unless you can put yourself in their place and find within yourself that same problem or that same flaw. And that's where we find that God said to Moshe, when Moshe Rabbeinu was on the mountain, in the heavens, receiving the Torah, and down back on earth, the Jews were making the golden calf. So God said to Moshe, Lech reid ki shiches amcha. Go down because your people have become corrupt. So Moshe, who was in the heaven of heavens, without eating, without drinking, the Jews were down below in the lowest condition of idolatry, and God says, go down because your people have become corrupt. It's your people. And in that way, Moshe was able to judge them and to argue their case because he identified with them as his people, and he went down, Lechreid, he went down to their place to see their corruption, and then he pleaded their case and was able to win forgiveness for them. But remaining up in heaven, he was of no use. He was of no service to the people because he couldn't appreciate their condition. And the same is true also, the Alter Rebbe writes that angels cannot judge human beings because they don't appreciate the difficulties of the human condition. So only a human being, a neshama in a body, can appreciate what a human being goes through. And that's why the judges and the enforcers couldn't be in Israel and judge and enforce behavior outside of Israel. They had to have judges and enforcers that lived with the people outside of Israel. Now, although the Ari Mikvot, the cities of refuge, had to be in Eretz Yisrael, yet, even in Eretz Yisrael, there were various levels. We find that there were cities of refuge on the east bank of the Jordan, and there were many incidents of unintentional killing, and the cities were necessary on that side of the Jordan. And then there were cities of refuge that were in Israel proper, and that was on a higher level, a holier level. And even there was a city of refuge on that level. And then we are told that after Mashiach comes and the borders of Israel are extended, then we will build additional cities of refuge, obviously again on an even higher level than Israel proper of today. And that means that this phenomenon of a person spilling the blood of a person, shedding another person's blood, this exists on many, many levels. And for each level, there's a city of refuge. There's a rectification for that level of bloodshed. And even in the world to come, even with Mashiach, there will be a condition in which a person is not serving God properly and thereby shedding his own blood, that the level that he could have been on, and for that he needs an Ari Miklat. Because on every level there is the service that is appropriate to that level, and then there is the failure to live up to that service, each one according to his level. As it says, Eisei ta'avedu uveisid bakun, it is God who you should serve, and to him you should cleave. So the Rebbe says that a person who is on the level where he could be cleaving to God, instead he is only serving God, for that he has to do tshuva. And so this is the idea of the month of Elul, when a person has to make an accounting of himself, which is the idea of the Ari Miklat. The accounting has to be each person according to his level. So you have to take into account all the thought, all the speech, and all the deeds in the course of the past year, whether they were according to Shulchan Aruch, a higher level, whether they were all beyond the letter of the law. Because the person who is capable and who is on the level where he should be serving God beyond the letter of the law has to take account whether he lived up to that potential. And then there's an even higher level. Even if he did beyond the letter of the law, but was it to the full extent of his capacity, of his abilities? As the expression is, according to the camel is its load. So even if everything he did and thought and said was according to Shulchan Aruch, what's more, it was even beyond the letter of the law, but it was not all that he could do. He could have done even more than that. Then for that he has to do tshuva. And so, a person who is involved all year in business, and the people who spend all their time sitting in yeshiva, surrounded by holiness all year, each of them has to do tshuva on their own level. Because the person who sits in the yeshiva and the Beis Medrash all year, and the study of Torah is his life, even he has to make an account to see whether he has lived up to the level of mitzvahs that he is capable of. This is what the previous that we spoke about 2 years ago, that there is a custom. It is the habit in this country that during the months of Elul and Tishrei, the yeshivas close, and all the students, the talmidim, all go home, which is the exact opposite of what really should happen. Logic and intelligence dictates that on this time, in this special time, instead of going home, this should be a time that, regardless of what else was happening in the course of the rest of the year, but at least these days, he should be devoted completely to Bikshu Panai, to getting closer to godliness, and not to go home. And this is also a lesson for people who spend their year involved in business. When it comes to the month of Elul, or at least the 18th day of the month of Elul, the last 12 days of the month of Elul, where each day represents a month of the past year, or at the very least, in the days of Slichus, the week before Rosh Hashanah, that even a person who all year is involved in business should run away from his business. As it says concerning the cities of refuge, to flee there, and to be surrounded, and to be settled in, to live in the city of refuge, to be absorbed in holiness, at least for those days of the month of Elul. And through this Aveda, and through this taking account of oneself in the month of Elul, fleeing, running away to an environment of holiness. That is the proper, correct preparation to receiving from God a ksiva v'chasim ha-teva on Rosh Hashanah, that we should be inscribed for a good and sweet year in all our needs, in children and in health and in sustenance. In volume 4, Chelek Dalad of the Likutei Sichos, the Rebbe says on the verse in our Sedra, Ki Adam Eitz HaSadeh, that the person is a tree in the field. The Sifri says, Melamed Shechayav Shel Adam Einei Ela Min Ha'ilon. This shows us that a person lives mostly, primarily from a tree. Although a person eats many different kinds of foods, but he lives mainly from a tree. So the question is, where do we see that a person lives from a tree more than from other foods? In Likutei Torah, the Alter Rebbe explains, V'lechem levav emes yisod, that bread satisfies the human heart. So there the Rebbe says that although a person eats meat as well, yet the main satisfaction, the main sustenance that a person gets is from bread. And the reason for that is that the vegetable, which is bread, can better satisfy and nurture the person because it is lower than the meat, which comes from an animal, which is the level of the chai. Because the higher the divine source, the lower it comes in creation. So the lower something is, the greater is the hidden word of God that sustains the human being. So the fact that a human being it gains life and energy by eating that which is lower than him, the word of God, as it says, not by bread alone, but by the word of God, it is the word of God in the bread that gives life and energy to the person. And the word of God that is in the bread is higher and greater than the word of God that is in the meat, in the animal. Because the bread comes from the vegetable world, which is lower than the animal world, and therefore it carries a greater godly source. This is also why the animal lives mainly, the kosher animal, lives mainly off vegetation. And so when a person eats meat, the energy that he's getting is not only from the word of God that creates the animal, but also from the word of God that creates the vegetable, which is in the animal from which the animal lives. And that's why the Medrash says that a person lives primarily from the tree, because the tree is the primary vegetation, the most prominent vegetation. And it is from the word of God in the vegetable kingdom that we get most of our satisfaction, more so than from meat. In explaining the Rashi, in our Parsha, the Rebbe writes that most of the authorities who enumerate the 613 mitzvahs, they count the commandment of appointing shaftim v'shaitim, judges and enforcers, as one mitzvah. Not two mitzvahs, but one mitzvah. Why is it that this is all one mitzvah? So the Rebbe explains that there are two functions that a shaiter, the enforcer, has. If the idea of the enforcer is that he actually carries out the verdict that the judges reach, as for example, if the judges decide that a certain person should receive the lashes, malchus, then the shaiter was the one who actually administered the lashes. If that's what an enforcer was, then the enforcer is an integral part of the judgment. and should be considered another mitzvah. But if the function of the sheiter, of the enforcer, is that when the judge reaches a verdict and the accused, the guilty party, doesn't want to abide by that judgment or doesn't want to carry out the instructions of the judge, then you have to have somebody who will force him, convince him to behave according to the verdict. As for example, if the judge finds that so-and-so has to pay money to his employee or to his employer, and the guy refuses to pay the money. So then you need an enforcer to encourage and to ensure that the person will do what the judge says. In that case, not every decision of the judge needs a sheiter, needs an enforcer to make it happen. Generally, the judge makes it happen. By his judgment and by his verdict, he makes it happen. If, in certain circumstances, there is a belligerent party who needs to be convinced to obey the judge, then the sheiter comes in to do his job. But then he's merely an assistant helping the judge accomplish what a judge is supposed to accomplish. And so it is not counted, appointing enforcers is not counted as a mitzvah for itself, by itself, one of the 613 mitzvahs. It is merely a support for the judge. So appointing the judge is the mitzvah. And the judge might at times need an enforcer to enable him, to help him carry out his job. The job of the judge, not the job of the enforcer. On a spiritual level, judges and enforcers apply also to a human being within himself, that a person has to appoint and establish within his own existence, within his own being, judges and enforcers. Judges means the study of Torah, to know right from wrong, and enforcers means to actually carry out the instruction of Torah, to live by the halacha. So the understanding that this that the fact that the sheiter is not a mitzvah for itself, how does that translate into the spiritual enforcer? Well, what we're told is that the judge really is the one that not only reaches a verdict, but also makes the verdict happen by his own authority. And only rarely, only on occasion, is there a need for an enforcer. And that's because in the spiritual, the study of Torah really is for the purpose of doing the mitzvah. Because the tachlis of chachma is tshuva or meisim teivim, as it says in the Gemara. The whole purpose of gaining wisdom is so that you would do tshuva and good deeds, mitzvahs. And if the learning doesn't bring the person, doesn't move the person to do the mitzvahs, then there is something wrong in the learning itself. So it's really the job of the learning to make the mitzvah happen. Only on occasion, when the Yetzirah is really stubborn, then you have to have an enforcer, and that is, you have to get tough with your Yetzirah, and you have to scream at it, and you have to call it names, and so on, in order that it should allow you to do the mitzvahs. And that's why, concerning the future, we say in the davening, V'ashiva sheftayich kevarishayna, which is taken from a pasuk in Yeshaya, and it doesn't say that in the future, after the coming of Mashiach, or in the times of Mashiach, that God will return judges and enforcers. It says only that God will reinstitute the judges as in the early years. And that again is because in the time to come, in the days of Mashiach, there won't be any need for sheitim at all. There won't be any need for enforcement, because the learning itself will bring the doing.